This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 336. Leave everyone's mother out of this. This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming tech gadget and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And we have a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Yeah.
You know, we gotta start the show saying something first, right?
Who?
Right. You know we gotta do something first, right?
We do.
Because it's been a week since we've done our show, and the last time that we were getting ready to release the show, something happened here in Boston.
Yeah.
And so before we get into our regular shtick and have all of our fun, good time
stuff.
We
gotta have a serious moment.
We're gonna have a serious moment real quick, and then we're gonna get through it, I promise. Because everyone, I'm sure, is really kind of done with last week. I know I'm almost over it, but...
I was over it 2 hours after it happened.
But that's because you're a dick. But here's my thing.
I didn't mean over, like, oh man, I'm totally over. I'm just like, man, that really sucks. Feels... And then 2 hours later, I'm like, the feels are still there, but I'm not going to be like, the feels!
I was still the feels, but what I want to say, because a lot of people have probably said it more eloquently than I will ever say it, but what I want to say is that I am so proud of my city. I am, I have a deep respect and gratitude for the law enforcement teams that gave up vacations and worked hours on end without sleep to bring a very scary time for the entire city under control as fast as they did with the resolution that they did. I am so proud of our community to be a part of it, to be associated with it. Boston fucking rules. I don't care who you are. Boston rules. Love you to death. Thank you so very, very much. See? Just real quick, simple, serious. Take a sip of my adult beverage here.
I mean, I think it just goes to show. Because, I mean, in my circles, everyone's like, I can't believe this would happen in Boston, like a place like Boston. You know, whoever thought they would target, and you know, the city. And in my mind, strategically, I'm thinking it'd be one of the places I would think about it. They attack New York.
Like, everything's New York, London, Boston, Paris.
Yeah.
You know, all,
I mean,
all
Boston's
kind of
on the lower end of the important scale, but it's still a major city that a lot of...
First of all, Boston is never on the low end of the important scale, and if you say that, you deserve to get kicked in the head. But, not you, but, like,
I'm
other people.
I'm the one who said it. I'm sorry, but compared to places like London... And...
Chowda.
England.
Chowda.
Like, I mean, Boston is a hub for a lot of, you know, worldly people to come, but, you know, they don't come very often.
You're so wrong. They do.
But being on the serious tip, like Washington, I would expect things like this to, you know, be targeted.
Dude, of course it's a target.
I mean, D.C., but in the whole spectrum of all the places that this type of targeting could happen, people put Boston on the lower end because they would never think that someone would anticipate an attack here, which makes us that much more vulnerable to things like this, which is why people were so impacted. I mean, am I devastated over what happened? Absolutely. We had a couple of friends who were in the area at the time that it happened, and I mean, I'm so grateful that they were all okay. I was planning to even go into the city that day, so in my mind, I'm like, wow, the one time I decided to say no to myself, it was actually probably a good idea that I did that. But, you know, in my mind, I would definitely entertain Boston as a place, you know, if I was going to be an evil terrorist to target because of things that bring in people like the marathon.
If you were
going
to be an evil terrorist, I would just move to Canada.
If I was an evil terrorist and was trying really hard at my job, then you'd have a right to fear me. Otherwise, I'm pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, because here's the thing. As far as you and, like, completion of stuff, unless there's
See, trophies, I'd be a horrible terrorist.
Unless there's trophies involved, you're not having it.
If I was a terrorist, I'd be a horrible one because I would never complete a task and everyone would be safe all the time. So they should get people like me to be terrorists because then we'd live in an era of peace.
Because of lack of completion. Pandas are lazy.
Yeah.
And you don't attentively listen. So you're like, wait, I'm supposed to put what in what bag?
It's like, I put them in a blue bag. They're supposed to go in the red bag. Well, it was right next to the, it was this, the red bag was next to the blue bag.
But I'm redeemable.
It's like, I know where the bag is.
But the bag is not where it's supposed to be.
It was at the, it's the laundry bag. So now it's at the laundromat. Whoops. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
But anyway.
To be serious, though, Boston has risen up against, you know, the shadows of, I don't want to say evil, but I mean, I guess I kind
of can. Let's just say it like this, okay? We're so proud of the city. We are grateful that...
I'm glad to be Bostonian.
Bostonian?
I'm glad to be a Bostonian. And I'm going to rock my accent today so y'all can suck it. That's right. Going to do the accent. All show.
I
ain't even gonna try.
I created a monster, and I'm so sorry. All I wanted to do.
I would drop my mic, but it's connected.
All I wanted to do was say thank you to the law enforcement agencies and express my gratitude.
Being towns, my motherfucking wicked piss of city.
To everyone who was affected by the marathon. And instead,
bro.
I got a fucking chowder head over here going crazy.
Hey, yo.
I'm so sorry. But anyway, let's talk about video games, and maybe she'll forget that.
Let's talk about video games.
Oh my god, or maybe not. Do you want? Do you
tell your mother hello for me? All right.
No. Don't say hi to anybody's mother. Leave everyone's mother out of this. We have to talk video games, and I've got a whole bunch of video game stuff to talk about. Before I jump into it, I just want to thank Sean from Firehose Game for being on the show last week.
Firehose.
We had a lot of fun, and we'll have a giveaway coming up soon to give away a couple of copies of Go Home Dinosaurs. So make sure that you follow us on Twitter so when we drop that, you can be a part of it. Trust me, you'll want to be a part of it. But as we get into video game stuff this week, I played a bunch of different things. First one up, actually, I picked up a review copy of Ninja Gaiden Razor's Edge for the PS3 from Tecmo Koumi. So I want to thank them for sending over a review copy of the game. As you guys know, I am a huge Ninja Gaiden fan. I love the game. It's one of the few games that really and truly does punish you for being too brash. And really is a difficult game as you move on, but it's a balanced difficult, which I've enjoyed. So Razor's Edge picks up with the last installment of the game and just adds a few more modes, some difficulty, some polish, I think. I'm only a quarter of the way through the game right now, but if you enjoyed Sigma, Ninja Gaiden Sigma at all, I definitely, definitely think that you'll enjoy Razor's Edge on the PS3. It runs really well. It flies. It looks gorgeous. And so far, so good. So I will have a written review coming up soon. As soon as I finish the game, be on the lookout for that. You'll find it on our EGM Now page. But yeah, I really am enjoying running through it. More so than I enjoyed the previous version of the game on the Xbox 360. So, Tecmo Koei, keeping my PS3 running. So you gotta give him props for that alone.
Props.
So that's first up on deck. Next up on deck, couple of things. Played a few games on the Xbox 360. We have to talk about BioShock Infinite.
I was just about to say that the joint conversation is most likely going to be about BioShock Infinite.
We do. We have to talk about BioShock
Infinite. And we know we're like 2 weeks behind, but you know what?
We tried to give you guys time to actually complete the game because
we're
going
to spoil the fuck out of
to
it.
Spoil everything.
Well, I mean, it really kind of depends because whatever our interpretations are may not be there.
Well, our interpretations might be different. We might not be spoiling anything as far as interpretations go, because you may have different interpretations, but we're going to talk about the whole story. Yeah. So we are going to spoil that for you.
So if you have not finished it,
you need to like
listen to half the show.
The next, you know, like half hour of the show, because we got a lot to talk about. So I'm going to pause for just a second and tell you, here's your opportunity to fast forward this podcast past the BioShock stuff. Go. All right, if you're not fast forwarding at this point, you're with us. You're on board for this conversation. So I had to wait for Panda to finish the game, because after my live play, which if you listen to the episode, you heard me say I was going to finish the game. I was not joking. I finished the game that night. I was so...
She did.
So
she really committed to completion.
And I don't do that, as you guys know. I usually pick up, you know, a couple hours here, a couple hours there with the game. I made my husband pop me popcorn, big old bowl, and I
not
went
that
at
you
it.
You couldn't have done it yourself.
And we know that I have popcorn related accidents. All right. Okay.
You guys should ask about that.
That's don't ask me about the popcorn incident. Okay.
Incidents. There's
Shut
more than one.
Up. We don't have to go there. I thought you were my bro.
I am.
Well, then, have my back.
I do.
Keep my secrets. Don't let them out. Damn. I'll be popping your secrets off like pop, 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 pop. See what I did there? Because it was a popcorn reference.
Yes, I did, which is, and I let you finish your joke.
Well, you didn't laugh at my joke, so that made me think you didn't get the joke.
I got the joke.
Well, I don't think you got the joke. Moving right along. Anyway,
get the joke?
Anyway, popped the popcorn, sat down. I actually had a review unit of Gunner glasses shipped to me, so I thought this is the perfect opportunity for me to kind of start putting these glasses through their paces and see if they affect my
live
gameplay
up to their standard.
And Gunner optics basically are glasses that are designed to help knock back and reduce eye fatigue by keeping some of the harmful white light that comes through your screen, whether it's your TV or your computer screen if you spend a lot of time at work, that causes a lot of eye fatigue, dryness, and things like that. So they're very lightweight frames, and they come in either amber lenses or clear lenses. You can even get them with your prescription in them, so they can be an all-day, everyday wear glass. But I got the gaming series glasses with the amber lens to see whether or not it really affects it. So in doing a marathon, I can tell you that typically when I marathon, for me, a marathon's about 5 hours. That's about the max that I can go before I start experiencing fatigue, discomfort, and that just makes it difficult for me to focus and to carry off a game. I wore the Gunner glasses. I was able to play for the next 10 hours straight, no problem. So take that or leave that as just a quick knee-jerk reaction. I'm going to be putting the glasses through paces for the rest of the week, and I will definitely share my be-all, end-all thoughts written up on our website, but they did let me get a 10-hour stretch with no dryness, no fatigue, very comfortable. And it really didn't interfere with the look and feel of the game either. You would think with a amber-tinted lens it would, but it really didn't. I didn't feel like I was missing anything or I couldn't see anything. Everything stayed really crisp for me, so I was really impressed with them. But I played for 10 hours straight. I got all the way through the story. I had to complete the story. It was so good. I was so captivated by what I was playing. I had to complete the story. I finished the story. I texted Panda, because I knew that she was going to be on vacation that week, so I wasn't going to really be keeping her up, because I know that she stays up late when she's got, you know, no work the next day.
I don't really stay up that late.
You were up at midnight, chick. So I texted Panda. I was like, did you finish it? Did you finish it? At which point she was like, no. Did you? And I was like, yes, you need to finish it. You need to play tomorrow.
She was like, you need to play it all now so that when I get home,
we can talk about this.
And I was like, girl, I'm on vacation. I will complete it when I complete it. And then 2 days after that conversation, I had completed it. And I'm like, we need to have the talk now. Let's do it now.
Well, the next day, I texted her while I was in a meeting, actually, at my day job. And I was like, so are you playing? And she's like, no. I was like, look. And Panda told me, I will share the text message with you. I know how it ends, so I don't have to play through it. And I said, no. Trust me when I say this, if you believe no other words that come out of my mouth, knowing how the game ends, if you've read it on a wiki or you've even seen the ending videos on YouTube, it is not the same experience as going through the game and getting to that point. Trust me when I say this. Like, as an example, I will tell you right now that what you think you know about Comstock is 100% wrong.
You think you know? You have no idea.
The real world. Columbia.
The real world. Bioshock.
And so Panda was like, oh, whoa? I was like, no, seriously. Everything that you think you know about Comstock, you're absolutely wrong.
You're wrong. And if you, throw it on the ground.
And if you play past the chapter you're in right now, you'll believe me. So I finally stoked her ego enough in telling her that she was completely wrong, which pissed her off, which is why she picked the game.
I gotta go figure this shit out. And no sooner do I get through this particular turning point in the game, do I text her at work. And I'm like, oh my god!
And then, proceedingly, every hour, almost on the hour,
bling! What about this? What about this? What about this? What's this? What's this?
And I was like, I told you.
She was absolutely 100% crystal clear correct.
So here's where I got drawn into the Bioshock story. And again, we warned you, we're going to talk about the entirety of the story, the gameplay, the whole thing. So again, this is your chance to fast forward because I'm not going to tell you again. For me, I got really drawn into Booker DeWitt's story. I felt for the guy. Irrational does a really good job, I think, of, you know, painting this hero who is not a true hero.
He's a Byronic hero. He's a hero who is not categorized by his virtues, but by coming from a dark place and then rising to a better state of action.
And even at that, as you play through the game, you learn that that's at times correct and at times not correct. Infinite One plays with a mechanic that I'm not always comfortable with in video games, which is time travel and alternate universes. And really, when you sit down with the game, you realize not so much alternate as much as parallel probability.
I love the fact that they're playing with the physics of time travel and time and space and dimension.
And not just using it as a scapegoat
like,
to easily
explain. Like,
oh,
we can totally now go back in time and redo something differently. It's like, no, we want you to realize that each of these things are so close that it's the simplest thing that is different. That one little thing.
So the whole premise of Infinite, as you start going through the story, is you realize that the universe is filled with constants and variables, and things that are constant cannot be changed. They exist in every eventuality. So
think Doctor Who. It's a fixed point in time. It cannot be undone.
For you Whovians out there. Okay. And then you have variables, and these are things that can change.
Can, will, and have changed.
Yes. Can, have, will change. In your universe. And that's where the infinite possibilities pop up in. Columbia takes place
in the sky.
Long after Rapture.
Yep.
And is a time paradox in and of itself. And I love the way that the paradox then unravels as you play through the game. So as Booker DeWitt, you're going through the game and you are on the search for Elizabeth. For you believe that in finding and retrieving Elizabeth
will clear your debt.
Your debt will be cleared. I'm picking my words very carefully. And that's really what you want to do. Once you find her, you start to have the feels for her almost immediately. And even though you desperately want to clear your debt
Booker DeWitt at that point, you know, he just thinks, oh, it's just a girl who's being protected.
Well, even when you first discover her, though.
And as you're coming upon discovering her and you realize that, like, they're watching her and they're analyzing her. Like, it's not even like, oh, there's just this bitch in a dungeon No, like, they're...
It's not like a princess is in another castle.
No, she's in a giant monument statue and of herself.
And that's why I'm saying, like, from the moment that Booker discovers her, he immediately starts to have protective feelings for her. He has feels right off the bat.
Yeah.
And at that point, he's already starting to question his giving up the girl to clear his debts. You know, so there's some humanity, there's some morality in Booker DeWitt right off the bat. Again, playing into his Byronic heroism.
Yes.
Which I think is cool and draws you to the character right off the bat. So you feel comfortable playing the character, which is important. Because if you don't give a damn about Booker DeWitt, then you're not going to give a damn about completing the story. And the ending will have really little effect
on
you.
Very little impact on you as a person.
So Irrational does a really good job of painting the character of Booker DeWitt very well. And I want to say right now that I think that Elizabeth is probably the best sidekick NPC
I wouldn't even
ever in a game.
I don't even like calling her an NPC because I feel like she has so much.
She's a non-playable character.
I know, but I'm just saying.
She is an NPC. You cannot play Elizabeth.
I know you can't play Elizabeth. However,
by definition, she's an NPC.
I know, but I feel like there should be another word for it because she's far more engaging than other NPCs that you encounter in games.
Really?
She's far more expressive and interactive.
She's more expressive and interactive than Yorda in Ico.
I didn't play Ico.
Well, but I want to slap you.
I heard you just drag a princess around with you and Ico.
You don't drag her around. She helps lift you up and carry you on shit and get you to
stuff. Shouldn't you be carrying her around?
Sometimes you do. You yell and she jumps and you hold her around. And then you grab her hand so you don't leave her places. Because sometimes she'll just...
Because you know she can't just walk for herself.
She can walk for herself, but she'll walk away from you sometimes because she gets interested in other shit.
Hey, look, shiny. Snap.
Yes.
End of game.
It's kind of like how I have to drag you around a trade show.
Yeah.
Where you're like, over here, and I'm like, panda! And you're like, oh! And I have to go and grab your hand and be like, no, leave the shiny, you can't have that t-shirt. Come on, let's go this way.
Aww. This is sad.
Does that make you an NPC?
Yes.
Sometimes.
It makes me a horrible AI. That's what it makes
Sometimes
me.
Sometimes I feel
and,
like
and that's
you
the
are.
Great thing about Elizabeth, is that she's a wonderful AI. She, you know, you don't have to worry about her wasting your health stuff. You don't have to worry about her misplacing
your
ammo.
She is the most helpful character,
like,
sidekick.
And she knows her limits. Like, she's not sitting there going, you know, standing out in the middle and taking shots and depleting her health. Like, she is constantly scavenging the area to find you salt, ammo, and health. Yeah, health,
yeah,
ammo, and salts for your vigors. You know, and she's actively engaged in what's going on and finding stuff for her to use because she does have that lockpick ability. So she's always scouting for lockpick tools to help you break into other rooms, which is great. It's absolutely great and wonderful. And I'm really glad they took that direction. And I hope other games in the future are going to take note of that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And so off the bat, you get Elizabeth, and then you're just trying to get out of Columbia, which you think would be an easy thing, because it's in the sky, right? So you should just be able to fall out of the sky. Like, gravity by itself should, like, aid you in this? Not so much. You have to fight so many things. So many things. But the fights, for the most part, don't feel repetitive. I think there's really only one fight for me that felt repetitive, and that's the fight with Lady Comstock.
Yeah.
Because you fight her 3 times... And it's the exact same way all 3 times?
Every time. 60% of the time, it's every time.
It's 100% of the time, 100% of the time. It's the same thing. And you have to do that 3 times. But every level that you go through, you experience a new piece of the story that either adds to the complication of unraveling it or not. And I really enjoyed that. You know, a lot of times when you play through a game and you're getting through the level, it's not necessarily adding to the gameplay, to the story, or to the lore. It's just, okay, here's your objective. You've got to complete it, right?
You have to complete this, and hopefully you level up in the process.
Exactly. And BioShock Infinite doesn't feel like that. You can spend time finding every voxophone, which is audio recording that's left by characters that, if you collect them all, more of the story is revealed to you and while more questions pop up, I do feel like the Voxaphones answer a bunch of questions, more so than the questions that they leave you with. So you discover how technology actually comes to Columbia, why there's such a parallel, I think, between Columbia and Rapture. Because basically, first spoiler right off the bat, the technology that is in Columbia with the vigors and salts replenishing and things like that, it's all stolen actually through tears in the time-space continuum from Rapture. So vigors really and truly are your powers from...
the injectors.
Yeah, from Rapture. So it's not like they're similar. They are. They've just been renamed after being stolen and marketed by Fink Industries. And
this is a Rat Fink face.
And I've never been so happy for someone to get their comeuppance in a game.
Oh yeah, I know. He had it coming.
As I was for Jeremiah Fink to get his. I only wish that I had actually done it.
But that's right. You got to watch it.
I did get to watch Fitzroy do it, which was good. And I love that
Fitzroy does it in public.
That the character of Fitzroy, which I think probably would have been very easily made a man, was actually a female role. And I thought that the play with the Vox Populi and the Comstock devotees was really good. So you had these two clashes between the upper class and the lower class, because there is no middle class in Columbia.
What is this thing called middle class?
You are either rich...
or you're dirt-ass poor.
And white, primarily.
And you're dirt-ass poor and you're the color of dirt. Or you're dirt-ass
poor and colored.
Like dirt.
Not necessarily.
Well, you're dirty, so you got dirt on you. And then you hang around with colored people... who are also dirty, but also colored people.
And you journey through dealing with these different classes and how they react to stuff while blowing things up and ducking patriots and all that kind of stuff. But what really interested me is the overall line. And the first twist in the game is that Booker DeWitt and Comstock are, in fact, the same person.
Well, kinda.
Well... no, sorta. Genetically, they're the same person.
Yes.
Okay? And there is a moment in time where a decision is made at the first major variable, I'll call it. Booker DeWitt has seen a lot of things. He was a Pinkerton. He was at Wounded Knee. He did horrible, horrible, atrocious things at Wounded Knee. He feels so much remorse about his actions there that... he seeks out a way to redeem himself. The way that he finds is a religion, a baptism. So here's the variable. If Booker goes through with the baptism, he comes out of the other end of the baptism, completely renouncing everything he was before that moment, his entire past rejecting it, and becomes... Zachary Hale Comstock. He takes on the name, he takes on the religion, he leaves all that he was completely behind and is a new man. If he rejects the baptism, he remains Booker DeWitt and becomes a man whose morals are so loose that he could do horrible things. On the other end, Zachary Comstock, in the name of religion, becomes super patriotic, eventually becomes super religious, finding that he doesn't agree with some of the morale and ethics things that the country decides to do. And so he takes his floating city in the sky.
And he succeeds the Union.
And secedes from the Union and becomes his own nation in the sky. Filled with crazy, crazy religious tones completely off the spectrum. So,
and very, very racist.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that. But for me, I see this as kind of like two ends of the same stick. You know, you either become completely driven by your morals and ethics, which can warp and do warp, or you become completely devoid of those morals and ethics, and they allow you to make some, what I would consider, poor decisions.
Yes.
Which lead to all kinds of trouble.
So much trouble.
Would you agree?
Yes.
Okay, so let's continue to spoil. So if you go down the road of becoming Comstock and you are the creator of Columbia, through all the science and experimentation and things that you do, because Comstock has the ability to see these tears in the time-space continuum and to hear and see the information that's on the other side, and so that's why he believes himself to be a prophet, because he's able to see into the future and see what he believes is the future and the inevitability of man. And so people follow him as a prophet, which leads to very, very weird things happening at Columbia. But because of all the science and the experimentation, he becomes infertile.
Yep, no babies for Mr. Comstock.
However, Booker DeWitt, in many of the realms of possibility, is not infertile because he doesn't go through any of the
experimentation. Great swimmers.
And does have children. So as he's gotten older, Comstock has decided that he needs an heir. And since his scientist is able to keep tears open for a period of time, Dr. Rosalind Lutess, he travels through one of these tears to a time period where an earlier version of himself, Booker DeWitt, has a child and basically offers to pay every debt that he, Booker DeWitt, has in exchange for the child. Now, you don't learn this until you get, like, almost all the way through the game.
Yeah.
And Booker initially makes the deal and gives up his daughter, Anna, DeWitt, the AD on the back of your hand, to Comstock at the last minute, feeling ridiculously remorseful, wants his baby back, fights Comstock as he's trying to go through a tear, trying to get his baby back. The baby reaches for him. The tear starts to close. Tear closes on the baby's finger, lops off the finger.
Lops off the tip of her pinky finger.
Anna DeWitt's finger, which is why Elizabeth is missing the tip of her finger, because Elizabeth is Anna DeWitt. So Elizabeth both is and is not Comstock's daughter.
Yes.
And Elizabeth both is and is not Booker DeWitt's daughter. See, we're already getting into the crazy stuff, and I haven't even gotten into this drink yet. And I was so drawn into that. And the moment that I had that realization in the game, which comes very, very close to the end of the game, I didn't see it coming, first of all. I got to a point in the game, and what's really interesting to me is that for the majority of the game, they're telling you.
They're not even telling you. They are showing you.
They're blatantly showing and telling you
in your face that your mind is going to be blown by the end of the game.
Well, and at points they physically freaking show and tell you in a way that you are in fact your own enemy and you don't pick up on it.
Yeah.
Okay, like there are points where you're fighting and, you know, people are talking about how Comstock claims to be at Wounded Knee. And Slade, Captain Slade, who was there, was like, he was never at Wounded Knee. He's like, Booker, but you were. And you're like, yeah, I was at Wounded Knee. And you're like, blah, blah, blah. Nope, nope, nope. Don't get it. Don't see the parallel. Blah, 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 blah. You know, and for me, I don't really kind of take it as, like, infinite and irrational going, okay, this entire game, we're going to be fucking with you. We know that you are, in fact, you. But you don't know that you are you. And you're the bad guy, even though you're the good guy. But you're not really a good guy. You're kind of a bad good guy.
I think this is a great introspection into a person. Because most of the time, our own worst enemy is ourself. So why not portray that in a medium that will allow you to take that to a
higher visual play.
No, it makes perfect sense. But it's not what I expected the game to be. Like, most of us who saw the trailers, who, you know, spent time with Irrational at both PAX East and E3 before the game came out, you know, before the first pushback, everything we touched was all about Songbird. Every marketing piece was like, oh my god, the Songbird thing is like so huge, it's so big, it's gonna be like a huge part of everything that goes on.
And it was only really there for, like, you saw flashes of it throughout the game.
Songbird's in the game for like 12% of the game.
And then, and the last 6% of that you actually get to use.
And you're not even, and you don't even fight Songbird.
No, you don't.
You use Songbird. Songbird helps you. So much. Seriously, that battle was like such ass.
Man, it took me forever to get the flow of that fight.
That fucking last boss mission was like that the shittiest. That
horribly. And it was a great way to utilize Songbird, I thought. You know, like, I
but
think
basically,
it would
have
been
great
if we'd been able to fight him and then be able to use him. I feel like we didn't earn the right to use
Songbird. Here's the thing. There's a season pass for Infinite, which means there's at least 3 DLC packs that are planned, right?
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of things that are left to explore, because as you get through the game, first variable is that you are, or can be, have been, were, Zachary Comstock. Okay. Oh, yeah. And are not Zachary Comstock. So that's the first variable. Elizabeth losing her finger is always a constant, which to me tells me that you always
give her up.
And you always feel remorseful about it and try to get her back. So that's a constant. The Lutesses are now a constant.
Now.
Because both Robert and Rosalind Lutess, who are both physicists, and they are not, have been, will be related.
I like how you worded that.
Thank you. They are now a constant in the game. And they're basically your guide into Columbia.
I wouldn't even say they're really a guide.
I feel like they
take the guiding approach the way that the Cheshire Cat and Alice in Wonderland takes.
It's still a guiding role.
It's like, hey, blah 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 blah.
Okay, like as soon as you get to the point where you're going after the gunsmith and he ends up being dead, they appear and they're like, oh, well, look at it like this way. What do you see if you look at it this way? Dead. Oh, what do you see if you look at it this way? Alive. Huh. And what I love about the Lutesses is that if you don't do what they want you to do immediately, they talk shit about you.
Until you finally do it. I mean, like, I'm kind of glad that we're now on the subject of the Lutesses, because we should approach.
Go ahead, talk about the Lutesses.
I mean, when you first, completely blind, not really knowing what's going on, you know, you take them at their word. Oh, this is my brother, this is my sister, and you don't think anything about that.
Yes, they look like twins.
They look like they're twins. And they complete each other's sentences, which, you know, in some certain cases, twins can be and have been known to do that.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you're playing with the realm of infinite possibilities, there's easily a chance that in some parallel universes, there is only one Lutess, and that is Rosalind. And in another one, the physicist Lutess was Robert. And maybe in another one, they actually were brother and sister, but only one of them was a physicist. Or, I don't know, maybe perhaps the Lutesses that we have now come to know in the game are essentially the same person.
Correct. That in some, just like you said, in some universes,
that Lutess was a male as opposed to a female.
Our Lutess is Rosalind, and in some universes, our Lutess is Robert.
And they've been able to whisper to each other through these parallel possibilities.
Yes. Basically, at one point in time, both physicists were working on the same particle to create a powerful, they thought, tool, which ended up ripping a hole, since they were both working on it at the same time and came to the same conclusion. So this would be a constant. We're able to communicate with each other using Morse code.
Yep. Dots and dashes through time and space.
And so they then decided
that they wanted to be together.
Correct.
Which is where that awkward yellow flag of
what?
So are you flapping? Brother and sister?
Are you brother and sister, or are you...
Are you the same person?
I wonder if they're fully aware that they are the same person. And, I mean, we had this discussion, Ninja, where, you know, when we figured that this might be a possibility, that, you know, if you're...
Hey, you asked the question, and I told you.
I was like, I have to be the same person. I'm like, there's too much going on.
And you're like, do you think that they could be? And I was like, look, I'll put you like this, and I'll put it to you guys like this. If I am a narcissistic physicist, which both Lutesses are so up their own selves, it's ridiculous.
It is.
But it's also adorable. So if I am a single Lutess by myself, physicist, narcissist, you know, you can't tell me nothing. I'm smarter than you will ever be. And I find a version of myself who's the opposite sex in a parallel possibility.
So there's no way... I could hit it and quit it and no one would ever know what I'm talking about. They might just
And I them. Have the ability to bring them across. If I am that narcissistic, would I not treasure the ability to bang myself?
I would. Actually, no, I would not bang
myself. I'm pretty sure that's the way I put it in the text, which you're like, wouldn't you want to bang you?
I'm like,
if you're a narcissist,
would I pandalicious want to bang?
I mean, like, because it's the perfect
male
thing.
Pandalicious.
If you're a narcissistic physicist, if you are able to actually pull yourself as the opposite sex through time and space into your continuum, wouldn't you want to celebrate with some celebratory sex?
Yeah, but I'd also
with
call
yourself.
I'd call it the gentleman's reach around.
But you're not a gentleman, because one of you is a chick.
But if this gentleman pulling the lady...
This version of myself is
a
chick.
Gentleman's reach around.
This version of myself is a male. So that's like the ultimate masturbation, right?
Well, I mean, it is self-love, because it's you.
That's what I'm saying.
But I was like, whoa, mind blown. But no, I think that was simply amazing. And the fact that even the first moment that you encounter them, they are throwing this, they're taunting you the whole time. That this is what's happened, and you're just too dumb to know.
Yeah, pretty much. The entire time.
The whole time.
Really just slow.
They're just like, wow, you really are an idiot.
Yeah. At one point in time, Rosalind does say that.
And you're kind of like, bitch, if I had known, I would have smacked you day one, but regardless.
So towards the end of the game, you realize that you were Comstock. You realize that Elizabeth is your daughter, Anna.
Yep.
You realize that you are... at fault for almost...
The downfall of man?
Not the downfall of man, but definitely the uprising and downfall of Columbia.
Yeah. I'm gonna rise it so I can bring it down.
That Songbird is not the devil, and Songbird is constructed very much the same way that Big Daddies are constructed, which means there's a human element to Songbird, probably the reason why it's so protective. So we'll talk about my thoughts there on Songbird in a second, and Panda's thoughts. Then you get to the end of the game, and there's a moment that Booker DeWitt decides and tells Anna, as you're going through all these lighthouses, which you learn that lighthouses are doorways to different realms of possibility.
They, too, are constant. There is always a lighthouse, a man.
There's always the lighthouse, a man,
and a girl. Always.
And immediately I flash to Bioshock, and I'm like, fuck. There's always a lighthouse.
Yep.
A man.
And a girl.
Shit.
Always.
And so then a part of you goes, well, then was what you played through in Rapture one of the very opposite versions but possibilities of Columbia?
Columbia.
Was I Jack? And was I Atlas? Was I Alex Riot? Fucking shit.
Yeah.
So then your brain starts hurting, and you have to stop for a second and go, okay, no.
You have to stop. You have to give yourself a healthy snack. You got to put yourself back in a zen place.
You need to eat some brain food, so you need to have, like, some salmon.
Some omega-3s.
You know, for a moment, and then you can come back to it. You know, maybe have a nice glass of wine and go, okay, so let's stop here. In Infinite, once you discover all the doorways, you and Elizabeth are walking through them. She's explaining how she can now
be free
of the siphon that was siphoning off power so that she wasn't able to open tears, travel
through
them.
She was able to open tears and go through them, but she wasn't able to
create them.
Yeah.
And she wasn't able to go through them at will.
At will, yeah.
Once you destroy the siphon with the help of the songbird, she is able to do that.
She's able to see, and she gets eerily creepy right after the siphon
breaks. As soon as she becomes omnipotent, which is what happens when she's free of the siphon.
Like, the way that she stares at you reminds me of that meme of that crazy obsessed girlfriend. Like, her eyes are always just constantly wide, and she's just telling you stuff, and you're like, bitch, can you blink?
Like, just for a hot second.
Can I just see that your eyes are not, like, stapled
open? And so, like, Elizabeth then relates to you that, there's really kind of only one way to stop Comstock, because while you believe you've killed Comstock by
apparently
drowning him in...
Man, no, you bludgeon the fucker in his own basin of baptism.
And then you baptize him the long way by drowning him in the baptismal, I think is very, very key, seeing as how you are, ready, final spoiler, killed by your daughters, because they all show up.
Well, several of them show up.
Yeah, several of them show up, as the revelation of you, Booker DeWitt, being Comstock, and the only way to end Comstock is to end you before you have the chance to become Comstock. So they drowned you at the baptismal that you become Comstock at.
I mean, I'm kind of glad we brought up the baptism, because I really kind of want to talk about this.
So you get drowned in the baptismal twice.
And you drown. No. But...
And you drown.
Going back to the first start of the game, when you first appear at the lighthouse.
Yes.
There is a basin there.
Yes.
For you to wipe away your sin.
Yes. You can wash your face.
Which I think is hilarious. You know, because when we went back to that one, like, you know, the baptism, I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, wouldn't it be funny if that really had been, like, that basin had been the thing? Because they tease you with all of it when you're ascending the lighthouse. Like, you're getting all of those bits if you really pay attention to what's going on in the lighthouse. Like, it really is a mind fuck.
Well, it tells you, because, like, first of all, to even enter the lighthouse to go to Columbia, the code that you have to use is 122. When you get into Columbia, you run into the twins, and you have to flip a coin. And when you flip the coin, if you actually counted the math that's on their chalkboard, it's the 122nd time. As you run through, and you hear that you've been here before, and you've done things before, you learn that this is actually Booker DeWitt's 122nd time running through this possibility.
It's amazing.
It's a mindfuck. I really take my hats off. You guys at Irrational really have done a wonderful job. I played BioShock Infinite. I loved it. I immediately bought the season pass because there's so many things that are not explored that I think that they can and will explore in DLC. Like, you know, with Songbird being so much of the pre-promotion, there's so many questions that are there.
There's obviously some DLC that's going to go and expand on Songbird.
It has to. It just has to. I mean, I don't want to say obviously, because Irrational could be like, nope, forever and a day, wonder what Songbird is. We're never going to tell you. But I really, really hope
it's a bird and a song
that they go into that. There are some questions at the end of the game, whether or not Booker DeWitt is actually really dead, or not, and whether or not...
rather, I wouldn't even say if Booker DeWitt is dead. I think that the big general question is, was what he did enough to kill Comstock?
You mean, was what Elizabeth's...
What Elizabeth's, yeah,
was... did.
Was enough that enough to kill Comstock?
To kill Comstock.
Yeah.
And so, whether or not what you see with at the end of the game, if that's just an afterlife, an image, or hope, I don't know, but I really want that explored. And I actually want to know what the hell is the fucking deal with Lady Comstock. Because that poor woman gets the shaft, and they spend so much time focused on, you know, giving you some backstory for you to learn that she was kind of a trifling heifer. before she met Comstock. Yeah, she was a hoe. And she met Comstock, and he, like, forgave
that she was a hoe.
Yes. And allowed her to not be a hoe, but then was able to very easily kill her ass to protect a secret, blame it on Daisy Fitzroy, you know, because you always got to blame it on the black people.
Always do.
Ugh. And then go crazy with the whole screw the black people, which I really don't understand where the hell that came from. But I gotta tell you, I can't wait for the DLC. I really enjoyed it. Great story. Please, please, please let the DLC answer more questions than it leaves.
Don't let this be the video game version of Lost.
And if we end up, you know, because the homage with the trip down to Rapture, as Rapture being one of the doors and one of the possibilities, I was like, holy shit. Please, 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 please. Don't confuse me anymore and be like, no, everything that took place in Rapture, it's like the other swing of Columbia. Because, like, you have two leaders who have their version of what Utopia is. Columbia in the sky, Rapture sunk into the bottom of the sea.
I feel like morality gets twisted. I really feel that there should be a
Utopia. There's a guy, a lighthouse, and a girl. You're just like, oh, come on, don't. There's a protective robot.
I want to say that another constant is a monster of some kind. Frankenstein of some kind. A man-made
entity. That is designed to protect the girl.
That is sentient.
Okay? Then you look at the little sisters and how they're dressed, and then you look at how Elizabeth is dressed, and you're like, fuck, that's obviously a little Elizabeth's. Damn it! So, ugh!
The only reason why big daddies were so protective of little sisters is because that was essentially, like, their soul. Like, they ran off of the,
You know, like, there are people that have speculation that Songbird's Fitzpatrick from Rapture. There are people who are like, you know, little sisters or shattered pieces of Elizabeth. There's so much. Such a good mindfuck.
I mean, and they were really good about delivering subtleties, too. Because, I mean, if we're really going back to all the mindfucks, the fact that, you know, Comstock was able to see these tears and wasn't able to go into them, really, or pull things out of them, and the whole time that you're with Elizabeth, you start seeing, as Booker DeWitt can see things, but he can't pull them. You know, and you don't think about it because you're like, oh, Elizabeth, you know, open that tear. And she's like, okay. You know, and the whole time, I didn't think about it until after the fact. I'm like, how did he even know those tears were there? And like I said, they're toying with us from the start.
Yeah, once you finish the game, when you go back and play, there are things that pop now more for you, knowing what the end game is, that you're like, why didn't I see that before? It's so obvious. Like, this is ridiculous. I fucking just told myself. I said it out loud. Oh my god, I'm retarded.
Yeah. But that's really the story. So let's talk a little bit about mechanics and I mean, we've already kind of talked about how visually
stunning. Let's go through mechanics quick because we still have to get to Injustice.
Yeah, I know. So, I mean, primarily because I bought BioShock Infinite on the PS3.
I got it on the Xbox.
And I've been talking to someone who plays it exclusively on the PC, all the BioShock games. Primarily, if you have a decent to awesome rig, PC is definitely the better.
If you're comfortable playing PC games.
Yes. But I'm not even saying that because, I mean, you could learn the system. And the system would be able to curb to you because there's so much more custom. You can customize your hotkeys so much more efficiently than you can.
Okay, first of all, I'm going to stop you right there because it's not fair to compare PC to console. It's never fair to compare PC to console. Just for the fact that you can customize PC.
I'm just saying.
But I'm just saying it's not fair.
If you are horrible, if you have little baby ninja hands and can't hold your controller.
First of all, I have little baby ninja hands.
I know. And you've had to literally break your hand and reform it so that you could hold controllers.
I have not actually literally broken my hand.
You've had to get baby kid controllers.
I got a baby kid controller one time on the old Xbox. I played with a full size controller, both the Xbox and the PlayStation 3. agree. I'm going to say right now, I don't agree with you. It's not fair to compare a PC and be like, the game is so much better on a PC because you can hotkey. Well, of course you can hotkey. You're on a fucking PC. You have a limited number of buttons when you're dealing with console. That's the reason why you play console. I would not play this game any better, and therefore it would be a much more horrible experience for me on a PC because I would play it better on a PC. Yes, because you have played PC games. And you enjoy them, and you're good at the whole WDS and the spacebar and all that shit. Yeah,
like
I am
boss.
Not.
Strife
so,
like a boss.
So I don't think it's fair to say it's a better game.
W and Q.
Okay, because if you're not a PC gamer to begin with, the learning curve negates the hotkey piece.
You done?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. In my opinion. Pandalicious's opinion. No one else's but my
own. Really? Did you play it on a PC?
I'm sorry. You let me finish.
Go ahead, have an opinion about something that you didn't experience yourself. Go ahead.
I am going to talk of my experience.
Okay, great.
Says, since I have played the game on both consoles, the PS3 and the Xbox 360. I feel, out of the two, since I have not played it on a PC yet, that I do not have the proper knowledge to acknowledge it right now. But
really?
That might,
like, 3 seconds ago, you're
that
like,
might be
much better.
That might be retracted fairly soon. But regardless, out of the two consoles, it's better in terms of placement and controlling and mapping and all that, because you can set your controls to a different setting. That might make it easier for some people. It wasn't particularly for me. But the Xbox...
Well, because you don't play softball.
The Xbox is better. Now, in terms of graphic presentation, I felt it did look better on the PS3.
I agree
however,
with what you just said.
However, the buttons are, you know, certain things are overmapped at the same button. So, God forbid, you go to want to pick up, you know, a gun on the ground. And at the same time, Elizabeth's like, hey, I've got salts for you. And you totally miss out on the ammo that you need because you also are low on salts. And you take the salts and then you get shot in the face. Because you don't have bullets in your gun to shoot that patriot that just shot you in the face. Either way, because it's not a deal breaker necessarily for the PS3. I mean,
that situation happens on the Xbox too, depending upon if you're trying to get ammo at a time that the game determines that you need salts, and salts aren't there. Typically what happens is just at the point in time where you need a health boost or salt boost or an ammo boost, Elizabeth will be, or money. She'll be like, oh, here, found this. And you could be looking at a gun. What you always want to do is take the thing from Elizabeth first. And then you'll be able to complete the thing that, you know, you were looking at. Because if you don't take the thing from Elizabeth, you don't get to take the thing from Elizabeth later.
I mean,
the gun will still be on the ground for that spawn period for enemies, so you can come back to it.
But I would also say, for people who are playing it on the PS3, that you should definitely play with your
sensitivity turned down?
Yes, your sense, yes. Because otherwise you will get motion sickness really bad. You will lose a lot of accuracy that you probably generally have if you play first-person shooters. It shouldn't be that hard of a jump, but I had to turn mine down a lot.
Yep.
Because I was having problems.
Because you were sensitive.
Yes. And then on a final note, going back to nuances in the game, I have to tip my hat off to Irrational because they had a great way of playing with us, not only with the things that were in our immediate consumption in terms of eye and ear, but like with playing with radios and stuff in different areas, you were getting songs that there was no way they were around in 1914. And like, they're just all these little subtle things that, why would I hear this song here? You wouldn't. Ha 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 ha. Like, it's all connected, everybody. And that's the most amazing thing about this game. I feel like the guys who directed the Butterfly Effect should have waited until this game came out to see how to do it properly and then did the movie. Minus Ashton Kutcher.
Why you gotta hit on Ashton Kutcher?
Did you see the Butterfly Effect?
Nope.
Watch it and then
I don't watch Ashton Kutcher movies.
Well, I mean, technically that's not like a him movie. He was just in it. But I mean, this whole game is essentially a series of butterfly effects done right.
Yeah. I agree.
I don't
care whether or not you like first person shooters or not. You need to play BioShock Infinite.
Yep, go to your friend's house because he probably
has. And you do not have to play BioShock 1 or 2 to enjoy or get Infinite.
I guarantee you, if you play Infinite, you're going to want to play BioShock. Yeah, and the great thing about it, if you get it for the PS3...
But here's the thing. If you play Infinite and you're like, I want to play more BioShock, just play 1. Don't play 2. You're not missing anything. Don't play 2.
And for those who, got BioShock Infinite for the PS3, it comes with a downloadable version of BioShock on disc. That you can download if you don't already have it.
Yeah. BioShock 1. Just BioShock 1. Okay? Right?
But there you go.
Okay. So, formulate your own theories. Finish the game. Comment on our Facebook page. Let us know what you think, what your conspiracy theories are, and whether or not you think that Booker died, was revived, or not at the end of the game. We want to know.
Honestly, I feel like the endings that we're talking about, that where you hear a baby... And you hear Booker, you know, call out Anna.
But here's the thing. You don't hear baby. You hear the music.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. You hear music. You hear music. And you're like, Anna.
And you hear Booker go, Anna? And go to open the door. And then it cuts to black. But we never hear a baby.
I feel like, for one, it would be really great if...
But
here's my thing. Like, obviously, it'd be great if there was a baby.
After everything that he's gone through,
I think
there needs to be a baby in that bassinet.
But this is where I want to end on this note. It'd be great if there was a baby, but what if it wasn't Anna? What if it was a boy?
Oh, and it was Jack?
I'm just saying. That's all. Yeah. That's where I wanted to leave it. Just
but it can't be Jack, because it raptures before.
Or is it? So I'm just saying.
It has to be a baby, and it has to be Anna, and that's the only way that I will have
a
baby.
No, well, remember, there's a constant. There's a man.
There's always a man.
A girl. A girl in a lighthouse.
So it has to be a girl.
Right, but that doesn't mean that, you know, because the little sisters were the girls in Rapture. We never know who the constants actually are. We just know what the...
But if Booker is there, and he's the man, then we already have the man, which means we need the girl in the lighthouse.
We need the girl in the lighthouse. But I'm just saying.
Has to be a girl.
I'm just saying.
Because the baby can't be a lighthouse.
I'm just. Well, of course the baby can't be a lighthouse. It's a lighthouse. But I'm just saying, just for fun, wouldn't it be interesting? Because, I mean, the Lutesses, who are now a constant, did not have a definitive gender and were able to have two halves to that. So why couldn't Anna?
You've already established that in the role of constants.
I'm just saying, the Lutesses were not a constant and they made themselves a constant. So why under that realm?
The Lutesses are a constant.
Now. They weren't before.
Fink made them a constant, so they are now a constant.
They are now because they were made. That's my thing. So why can't something else make something else
because
a constant?
We've already established that in the rule of constants.
You know what? Don't break it for me. This was a stretch of my brain. Power, okay?
We'll eat more carrots.
Let me enjoy this, even though I'm most likely 99.999% wrong. Damn it.
You can enjoy it, but...
Shut up.
Okay.
Shut up.
Hurry.
Now when you get it and you look at the bassinet, it's gonna be a puppy.
As long as it's a girl.
Anyway.
It just has to be a girl.
And that's all. I think we're done on the BioShock Infinite stuff. Like, that is hook, line, and sinker until DLC starts.
Until the DLC drops. And then when the DLC drops,
but hey, I know we played something else that you're dying to talk about.
Yes, and I'm going to try and do it in less than 8 minutes.
Do it!
All right, so the other thing that I was playing this week and then forced Panda to play, because sometimes you got to force pandas to do their job. You play... Injustice Gods Among Us. Now, we both spent a little bit of time with Injustice and then tried to spend more time with Injustice at E3 last year. As you guys know, I am a big comic nut. I tend to live more on the Marvel side of the world than the DC side of the world. Although, you know, I have love for my DC characters. Batgirl. Injustice Gods Among Us is a very ambitious fighting game. First of all, I want to say that Injustice probably has
the most enjoyable story mode that I've ever seen attempted and played in a fighting game. The story is really good. Injustice focuses around the DC comic characters. So Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman,
Aquaman,
Flash, Aquaman, Green Arrow,
Shazam,
who am I forgetting?
Raven.
On the hero. Raven, Cyborg, Nightwing. Am I forgetting any of the heroes?
There's a lot of heroes.
There's a lot of heroes. And, Green Lantern on the villain side. Oh, yeah. And kind of sort of hero, Lex Luthor. We'll get into that. On the villain side of the world, you've got Catwoman, Harley Quinn, Joker, Solomon Grundy, Black Adam, Killer Frost, Deathstroke. You've got Doomsday, kind of, sort of Superman.
Which you should get into because you have less than 8 minutes.
Yeah, okay. So basically the story mode of the game, because at its core, it's a fighter. So you have versus mode, you have a couple of achievement and tactical versus play or single player. Star mode to build achievements in your character player roster up through the ladder. Regular arcade mode and single player. But the story mode, to be honest with you, is probably about a solid 4.5 to 5 hours of play, depending upon how good of a fighter you are. It harkens back to pieces of the story mode that you experienced in some of the later Mortal Kombat games, which isn't a surprise because NetherRealm Studios worked on the game with Warner. And it shows in a lot of the player moves as well as power moves, which are finishers that aren't finishers but can be finishers. In the story mode, the Joker has gone to Metropolis and is being hunted down by Batman, and he's done some really bad things. And the Joker does bad things a lot of times, but the Joker's really, really, really done the wrong thing. He has tricked Superman into believing that he was fighting Doomsday, when Superman, in fact, was fighting and killing a pregnant with his baby, Lois Lane. Superman loses his shit, knocks Batman to the side, because Batman was trying to take him back to Arkham before Superman got there. Didn't work, and Superman, as it goes to back, disembowels the Joker. Which sets in motion, very, very much like constants and variables in Bioshock, a reality where Superman has gone completely off his shit and is now basically a dictator and has imposed martial law, brainwashing heroes who won't go along with his plans or just straight up killing them, and ruling over the human people with an iron fist. It's not cool, and so Batman in this alternate universe, somewhat a little bit down the road in the future, is trying to stop him and recruits heroes from the timeline where you start the game. Aquaman, Green Arrow, Wonder Woman.
Batman.
And Batman. Thank you. Got looped in there. To basically stop Superman. And so you play through this story as various heroes going through the timeline. So there's chapters where you go through, again, very much like the later Mortal Kombat series, when you play the story mode, that you get forced to play different characters at different times, starting with Batman, rolling through Wonder Woman and Aquaman and Arrow and Lantern, even at times Joker, your Batman, and a couple of others, to basically stop Superman. And it's done really well, I have to say. You know, it seems like one of the things that killed Marvel versus DC,
Mortal Kombat versus DC was that Warner and DC weren't comfortable with taking their characters to a darker place. And I think because of New 52, they were a little more comfortable, because you definitely see a much darker Superman than we've ever seen in a video game.
He has horns on his crotch, y'all.
He kind of does have horns on his crotch. But you also see a little bit darker Wonder Woman. You see how easy it would be to kind of pervert the stalwart heroes that we know just with one tragedy. You know, it totally makes sense that Superman would lose his shit if Lois, carrying his baby, was killed by his own hands. And the logic that he displays actually kind of scarily, eerily makes sense. So the story mode's done in a really, really good way. I mean, it made me want to finish it, which was cool. And I enjoyed the story mode. And basically the way that it ended, it set itself up for additional gameplay. And it set itself up for easily becoming a franchise. The game runs amazingly well, and it looks just gorgeous. You can, if you choose to buy some of the DLC packs, you can get some of the New 52 costumes for a lot of the characters that are in the game, as well as some of the Flashpoint outfits, costumes that are available for characters. Their moves lists are all, at their core, very simple and strong fighting games, but really where Injustice makes you work for it is in the juggle and in the combo, which is where a good fighter should take you. Not necessarily relying on the superpowers, but really relying on your ability to chain the right attacks and work the right environmentals in each one of the power moves, which takes advantage of the character's superpower to inflict a multi-hit combo. The smallest of which being a 5-hit combo, the largest that I've actually been able to pull off being a 10-hit combo, which is Batman's. It's really cool. There are times when, you know, we played together and we would pull off moves and just be like, holy shit, how did I do that and can I do it again? And that, to me, is always a great mark of a really good fighter. When I lose my composure and I just get completely fan-struck with something, you've done a really good job. And Injustice does that. I'm really looking forward to running through the additional modes. Pandalicious was able to beat me quite a few times.
Like 3 out of the 15.
So, that's 3 more than you usually beat me in a fighter.
Shut up.
What? Truth speak. Own it. So, if you enjoy fighters, you really owe it to yourself to check out Injustice. I'm sure that if you haven't got the demo, it's still available on Xbox Live and the PlayStation Network, so you can try the demo first before you buy it. But if you like fighters, it needs to be in your collection. And I would say more so than Marvel vs. Capcom. Yeah, I said it. Those are my thoughts.
Yeah, I can tell.
You got any thoughts?
No.
You played it too.
No. I haven't played any of the story, though I think I might want to just get that aspect of it. I mean, I don't know that much because we just played it earlier this weekend and I didn't get that much exposure. So, I mean, as soon as I do, when I've had more time with it, I think I'll chime in. But until then, I really don't.
Do you actually plan on playing the story?
Yeah. I really kind of want to see all that shit go down that we were talking about for myself. So you make me want to look at things and not just hear about things.
I make
things.
You want to experience the world.
There's a difference between looking at a thing and seeing a thing.
It's like you heard me.
For once. Attentive listening, right?
Yay! Attentive listening! And you should attentively listen to our podcast, available every single Monday by visiting us online at electricsisterhood.com, or you can use our short address, which is
ESH.co. That is ESH.co. The short address can vouch it a long one. Check out any articles written within the week. All questions and comments should go to our Facebook page.
Facebook?
Facebook.com/Land of Esh. And yeah, this podcast is pretty awesome. You should continue to listen to it.
Absolutely. We put out brand new episodes of our podcast every single week
on the web. You can find them in the iTunes music store on your desktop, the iTunes podcast application on your iOS device, or the Microsoft store by searching for Electric Sisterhood or and hitting the subscribe button there. But if you're not living La Vida I or you don't have a Windows mobile device, well, then you can always
plug us into any RSS reader or any podcast search engines. But if you're looking for us, we've got friends. You should listen to them, too.
Absolutely. While ESH is available every single Monday, you can follow us up with a brand new episode of the Boston Bastard Brigade podcast, co-hosted by our homeboy King Baby Duck over at b3crew.com. You can check out a brand new episode of the Geek Aggro podcast, held down by our homeboy Deuces Wild. All kinds of geek nerdery, music, awesome shiz the nits. You should be checking that out. For the rest of the week, keeping your nerd needs satiated, there's all the stuff that we write about over on our review page, the community page that we have at egmnow.com/electricsisterhood. You can check out all the things that we're writing about, the thought-provoking things that we are experiencing and sharing with you, as well as checking us out and interacting with us, asking us questions, recommending stuff for us to check out or check into on our Facebook page, and just generally conversating with us and seeing what's going on by checking out our Twitter streams. Check out twitter.com/ESH News for all of the stuff that we're writing about, new podcast episodes from the entire community. If you want to keep up with all the individual members, the easiest way is to go to my page, twitter.com/NinjaSista, and then click on the Land of Esh list. Everyone who is anyone that makes up ESH is on that list. You gotta check them out. So with that, I think we've done all the business. This is the point in time where I say Panda.
Yeah.
Let's shit you digging this week.
Believe it or not, it was a movie trailer for that Kevin Bacon movie where, like, there's
he turns into a piece of bacon?
No, not that movie. Oh. That got sweeted. Oh. Anyway, the movie I'm talking about, I believe it's called The Purge. We're living in a utopia world where there's, like, no crime except for this one day, where for 12 hours in that day, all crime is legal. And, like, he has this beautiful home with his family, and they're preparing to, like, lock down for this, like, night of mayhem. And people somehow get in, and you end up getting terrorized in your own... He gets terrorized in his own home. And, I mean, I've always liked movies that really play with social order a lot.
Yep.
So this is right up my alley. And I mean, Kevin Bacon's been doing a great job in The Following, so why not take it to a new Bacon level?
Can you even have a new level of bacon? Is that possible?
I think we're gonna find out with this movie. But that's what I'm digging this week, was that trailer, and I'll put links in the show notes for that. What are you digging this week?
I am digging all of the old school, as far as I'm concerned, Cartoon Network cartoons hitting Netflix, because I am having a Samurai Jack marathon, and that's just good times. It's good times.
I agree.
So, as always, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And there's always a man, a girl, and a lighthouse.